the video for the YouTube is what you're
talking about. It's one of the first music videos.
Yeah, I can tell.
Don't be so goddamn elitist.
Alright, Hemingway.
Alright, welcome to Three Drink Minimum, your movie podcast with a drinking problem.
Yeah, and we also have a movie problem.
Yes, our drinking podcast with a movie problem.
There you go.
Oh, we've been drinking too much today.
Yeah, welcome to our life. It's a tough one.
So welcome to our first ever After Action Report.
Well, we did the Turtles one.
Oh, yeah, I guess we did do the
Turtles.
Yeah,
so this is our second installment of
Well, now we have 10 episodes. We're allowed to call them funny things.
That's right. We get to come up with unique names. Trademark. After Action Report.
Copyright.
All rights reserved, yeah. So, what's the date today? 19th?
Let me check the old watch I'm not wearing.
And spill your beer while you're at it. Yep. Well, technically it's the 20th now.
Yep. All right. Yeah. And I need a sock.
What is this, sex?
it's okay. I found some old napkins.
Probably from
stand
like...
Stand up on their own.
Probably from like three podcasts ago. Last time we spilled beer down here. So we just got done watching The Kingsman.
God damn, what a great movie.
I mean, God damn. What a phenomenal movie.
I went into that with, like, moderate expectations.
No, I actually went into it with high expectations.
And it was still met.
Like, it at least met my expectations, which were pretty substantial, considering I watched the Red Band trailer and got, like, it completely changed my mind. Like, the first trailer was sort of, like, Justin Bieber-y, like, One Direction-y. Like, I thought it was just, like, a teeny bopper version of a James Bond movie.
Whereas I kind of already had the feeling of, I was told beforehand that the comic that this is based off of, because this is a comic book movie.
Correct.
Was based off of Mark Millar's Kingsman, and Mark Millar also wrote Kick-Ass, which is one of my favorite comic book movies.
Yeah.
And so I was already excited. And then it was directed by the guy who did X-Men First Class, which is, oh, hey, one of my other favorite comic book movies.
Yeah, seriously. And it shows in every part of it, because they knew what the fuck they were doing in this movie.
God damn. This is, all right, I know that we've talked before about how good Dark Knight is and how good Days of Future Past is and how good, like, the Avengers and a couple other Marvel movies are. This is how you fucking do a comic book
movie. This is how you do a comic book movie that nobody knows is a comic book movie in the general audience.
Because yeah,
I did not know this was a comic book movie until we were on our way to see it.
Yeah, and I confirmed it for you.
That was it. I had no idea.
I didn't know it was a comic movie until last week.
I mean, that's... Everything they did was perfect. I want to know how true it was to the comic book now, so I'm probably going to go back and read it. But I don't care either way, because they did it phenomenally.
Yeah, it's on my list. I have a Comixology account, and I've actually saved all of Mark Millar's stuff to it, including The Kingsman. And I think he's got a couple other books that are supposedly really good that I think are probably going to get made into movies.
By the way, this podcast is brought to you by one of our local breweries, 50 West, and their Espresso Self Stop.
Espresso Self, yep.
And trust me, it's a phenomenal brew. We're in Cincinnati, so if you're not in Cincinnati, they don't sell by the can or by the bottle. It's by the keg and their tap room only. But
yep.
50 West Brewing, phenomenal.
Check it out.
Yeah, it's 50 West. It's not Blank Slate.
Nah,
Blank Slate's another great one.
Blank Slate's great.
50 West.
Same with Mount Carmel.
Yeah.
And Cincinnati is a great beer town, which
Man,
it yeah. doesn't get enough credit for. Also, the home of Sam Adams Brewery, which...
which is funny. Most bars around here consider it a... when you say, like, domestic, they consider it, like, a local.
it's on the list
of local breweries.
They still charge you microbrew, but...
Yeah.
But, yeah, no. Just fun fact for all 30 of you that listen to this podcast.
Yeah,
Sam Adams is a Cincinnati beer, not a Boston beer. It was started here. The biggest brewery for Sam Adams is in Cincinnati. They open one in Boston just so they can keep calling it Boston Lager. That's really the only reason for it. Anyway, so Kingsman.
Oh, my
Jesus
God.
Christ. So the song we played, Dire Straits, Money for Nothing, which, to be fair, Dire Straits, one of the most underrated bands of all time.
Do enjoy me some good Dire Straits.
They're the opening song and the opening title cards for this movie, which, I mean, It's hard to really put into words, but essentially it's like it's a helicopter with two spies hanging from it shooting guys going into a war zone, and it just it fit. And within a minute and it's, a half...
It fit because of the tone of the movie for the rest of the way.
Oh, yeah. It set everything.
It set the tone for everything to come up. It was playful, which was like, this movie had serious moments. Trust me, plenty of serious moments. Uh-huh. But it never got too serious, and there was always that relief at the right moment of comedy. It was great.
Yep. And I'll just go ahead and say, like, it set the tone right off. And I remember looking at Tony probably 90 seconds into the movie going, I'm on board.
Yeah. Sold. Yeah.
Like it was like very rare. Like normally I need a little bit of setup or
what's,
some like intro.
What's Galahad's name? Real name?
Which one?
The mentor.
Colin Firth. Fucking never done a performance like this before.
Fucking yeah. I was gonna say was it All King's Men and it's all like super dramatic roles and shit. Yeah. He puts on his action pants, and I think they're a little too small because he busted out of it.
King's Speech is the one that I think he's most known for now.
Oh, no, okay, so All the King's Men is not the movie he was in. It's King's Speech. That's the one, yeah.
Also, he's the writer in Love Actually.
Oh, yeah.
He goes off to the villa and falls in love with the Brazilian girl.
If he's done an action movie like this, I have not seen it, and it must have been phenomenal because he killed it.
And, which, in relation to that, the preview we saw for that Sean Penn movie... Also looks really
My god, like Sean Penn and like a
hardcore action
in like a Bourne Ultimatum style.
Movie. Like probably not like an over the top action movie, but very much like a brutal drama.
Like, no holds barred. Like when there's action, there's hardcore action. What was that even called? It was
we'll have to look that up. That'll be for another episode.
That blew me away when I saw Sean Penn and I was like, yeah,
there's a couple really good trailers.
Yeah. Well, I mean except for the Skype murders.
Oh, Skype, all right. So we saw a trailer for a movie where essentially it starts off with like, so much of your life is online and it's posting every picture.
All of your greatest memories, but also all of your worst nightmares.
And there's like, apparently there's like a video of like a girl getting
This girl gets too drunk. Something happens. They post the film online. She kills herself a couple days later.
She kills herself 3 days later and they have that on film.
Well, one year later, like all the friends are talking on Skype.
It's like a group chat on Skype.
And then someone joins. They don't know who it is. And this person starts like... saying shit like, oh, I'm gonna kill you.
Who posted the video?
Yeah. And, you know, and all this and shit starts going crazy.
The fat guy puts his hand in a blender or something.
I still think it's the fat guy. He's the only one that you're gonna, that is like, he kills himself.
Yeah, I'm sure it's the fat guy. But no, it looks dumb. And the movie's called Unfriended.
That's what
you know how bad it is that, like, we're really excited about this Sean Penn movie, which is a sentence I never thought we'd say. But we're really excited about the Sean Penn movie. not since Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Yes.
Yes. Now, so we were excited about the Sean Penn movie, but then we don't remember the title of it. But then you got the Skype Murders movie, which is called Unfriended, because it was so goddamn stupid.
I will unfriend anybody who watches it.
It was so stupid that the following trailer was the new Fantastic Four movie, and Tony looked at each other and went, yeah, we're going to go see that.
Instantly. But, oh my god, yeah. So the Kingsman. I'm we usually have no problem giving away spoilers.
Yeah, like,
I'm at this point, I'm even hesitant to tell you the basis of the plot.
Well, what if I release this in two weeks? Would you
technically, we have two you haven't released yet, so...
And what I'm saying is, we could.
So we're talking like 6 weeks
back. Yeah. Do you want to just do full spoilers then? Since it would be
full. Yeah. Okay. But 6 weeks from now, if you haven't seen it.
Yeah. Go fuck yourself.
Well, if you haven't seen it, pause it. Go fuck yourself. Go see Kingsman and then hit play.
Because... Also, Nick, go fuck yourself, and Dylan, go fuck yourself.
Well, now that you've got 80% of our listening audience, yep. Let's continue. Colin Firth is a member of... It's about a 10... Was it about 10 members?
It's a Knights of the Round Table.
Knights of the Round Table kind of thing. They all have historical...
they all have Arturian... I'm going to use that word. They all have Arturian names.
You looked that up!
No. right here. You've seen me this whole time. All right, so, there's Galahad, Lancelot, and...
But Merlin wasn't a member of the Round Table.
Yeah, he's an Arturian legend, though. King Arthur's mentor.
Right.
Okay.
So you got Arthur, Lancelot, Galahad, Merlin, like all of these like members of like that they make up the Kingsmen.
Yeah.
And they're basically just round table knights. They call themselves like modern day knights.
Yeah. They say the suit is the modern day armor.
Yeah.
And the Kingsman is the modern day knight.
Right.
And they are part of a covert intelligence agency far removed from government.
So it's
private.
Yeah, I would say it is a privately ran covert unit. Mm-hmm. That operates at the highest level of discretion, and they're outside of political politics and like meaningless squabbles and shit.
Yeah, they'll pass information on to the right authorities, but they don't answer to a certain authority.
To anyone.
So they're not MI6, they're not anything along those lines, because they make a point of...
Not KGB, not MI6.
When the original Lancelot gets killed, mm-hmm. who is played by Norrington from Pirates, Commandant Norrington, yeah.
Oh, wait, was what's his name's dad also Lancelot?
What?
No, what's his name? The main character's dad.
You don't see his face.
No, but what was... No, Lancelot was the other guy in the room with Colin Firth.
Yeah, Lancelot was the guy who gets killed by Blade Legs.
And
that's what role they're trying to fill.
Right.
You don't see who fills his dad's role, because that was 17 years ago.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, okay, I will say that is one thing that I wish it means nothing to the story, but I wish I would have, like, I wish they would have shown, like, at some point who filled out, like, his dad's shoes. Okay,
also,
we're getting way ahead of ourselves.
Before we get way ahead of ourselves, I want to put one thing out there.
Well, we're already way ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, yeah. I just want to say one thing is that I hope this movie does not have a sequel.
I mean, I hope it doesn't either, because it had... But it does have exactly the criteria that we wanted.
Yeah, it's set up perfect for what we said.
Because it ends and it's over and it has a nice closing bit to it.
With some open ending.
Not really.
Just enough.
He's a member of the Kingsmen. That's it.
The only open ending is that you now have this world you can play in.
And you have like the love interest who's also a member of the Kingsmen. And
kind of. Yeah, that's...
Well, I mean, like, okay, it's a professional relationship.
So, all right, so the movie opens on four spies going in to interrogate a guy.
In, like, Afghanistan.
Yeah, and in relatively the 80s, because they play...
Yeah, that's when Afghanistan was last, you know, like, Soviets and...
They play that Dire Straits song, I think, to invoke that era. And so, Colin Firth interrogating him.
He's counted 10, and then when he gets to 4, he shoots this guy in the knees, and the guy bends over like, you know...
That's a really cool scene.
Bends over like he's crippled in pain, and when he comes up, he's got a pin of a grenade in his mouth.
Yep.
And Colin Firth jumps to, like, get to the guy.
No, he doesn't move.
He steps forward. and the guy pushes him back.
Yeah, faceless guy pushes him back.
This unknown Kingsman pushes him back, jumps on the grenade, takes the hit, and saves everybody in the room. So he saves Colin Firth, he saves the guy...
he saves Merlin.
He saves Lancelot and Merlin.
Yep.
So, like, and Merlin is a huge character for the rest of the movie.
Played by Mark Strong, who's on record as saying is one of my favorite actors.
And he's a fucking good guy.
God damn it, yeah.
Thank God.
That never happens.
But, like, I love, like, you know he's a good, good guy? Like, he plays a great bad guy when I want him to be a good guy.
Yeah.
And, like, I saw him in this movie, and I said, God damn it, if you betray everybody in the Kingsmen, I'm going to be so upset that they pigeonholed you again.
And he doesn't. He plays the greatest, like, the support good guy character ever.
He's like the head of training / computer genius / apparently Learjet pilot.
Which, like, typically head of training guy gets killed in most of these types of movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, this guy, he lives on, it's great. So, yeah.
Colin Firth survives, this guy Lancelot survives, and Merlin survives.
But the guy who's classified as Lancelot dies.
Eventually. You don't know him at the time. He wasn't even in the Kingsmen, technically, because Colin Firth goes over and says, welcome to the Kingsmen.
Yeah, okay.
Afterwards.
So him and Lancelot are in training. And
correct.
He dies, and so he goes to the widow. With a Medal of Honor.
That has a K on it.
Yeah. He has a Medal of Honor and says, if you need anything, call...
If you need any favor, call this number. And what was it? Something... It had to do with the shoes.
It was...
Something not Braggs.
Oxford, or, not Braggs.
Oxford, not Braggs. And you never really understood it at the time.
Yeah, because we're not sophisticated. Now I'm starting to get sophisticated.
Okay. I'll get sophisticated just because of the one line from that movie.
Yeah, here's the fucked thing about this movie. Tony and I are not sophisticated people.
Sophisticates?
Yeah. We're not suit wearers outside of business.
Hey, if I made enough money, I would wear a goddamn suit everywhere.
See, I wouldn't because I hate ties.
Oh, but, no. I would totally rock a three-piece suit everywhere if I had the money for
it. Yeah, but now...
Send your money to...
After this movie, though, I am changing my position on that, and holy goddamn, I would rock some of these suits.
And see, that is one of my biggest loves about the movie, is that it managed to make, sophisticate gentlemen, not snobs, because they were sophisticated.
It was the pro version of How I Met Your Mother. The Neil Patrick Harris kind of character.
Exactly. Because you look at these guys and you just, like, you get that, like, you see the way they dress and they're so, like, posh in everything that they do.
Mm-hmm.
And you just instantly go, fuck him.
Fuck douchebag.
But... Yeah. Not like, and it has nothing to do with them being badasses and kicking the shit out of people. It has to do with they do everything the right way.
Yeah.
They treat people correctly. They did this, yeah. That, the other thing.
So Colin Firth tries to give the Medal of Honor to the widow.
And she doesn't want it. She doesn't want the favor. She wants her husband.
Yeah, she's distraught over the loss of her husband. So instead he gives the... Yeah, of course.
Mm.
He gives the medal to the child who's there. A little more. A little more. It's good.
How many fingers?
Eight.
We gotta start that. Give me a fist.
So then, it cuts to 17 years later. You see a scientist being kidnapped.
Who is
Mark fucking Hamill.
I wanted him to, when he got abducted, to then like do brain shit on him and becomes the Joker.
Yeah.
That's what I
want. No, goddamn. Like, that was... Like, you and I both looked at it. Oh, holy goddamn. That's Mark Hamill.
Well, you didn't realize it until he took, like... He had duct tape on his mouth. And you're like, why does he look familiar? And then the duct tape comes off. And you're like, oh, Mark fucking Hamill!
Yeah.
Use the force!
But, yeah, so he's a scientist. And he's being held captive. And then they're about to pour him some 1962 whiskey. And then...
he's being held captive, but he was promised he wouldn't be harmed, blah, blah, blah.
And then Commodore Norrington shows up.
Commodore. Yeah. Commodore Norrington.
Commodore Norrington.
Shows up in the front door.
And he kills everybody. He grabs the whiskey and does the almost Inglorious Bastards bit
of... A special ring in hell for those who...
It would be a sin to
waste good whiskey.
To waste a drop of this. And then someone knocks on the door, and then something pops out of nowhere and cuts him in half up the middle.
Yeah. Like, this bitch is ruthless.
Yeah.
Legsless and, McGee?
Yeah, she's got no legs. She's got the...
You got no legs.
You got no legs. She's Lieutenant Dan meets that guy from the Olympics who killed his wife.
Meets the T-1000.
Yeah. she's Lady Deathstroke meets the guy from the Olympics.
Oh, yeah. Nice reference. Yeah. So Lancelot gets killed, and it was Samuel Jackson who's at the door. And Samuel Jackson's a great, like, megalomaniacal bad guy.
He's an internet billionaire with a lisp.
He's an internet... he's an internet billionaire with a lisp.
Yeah, everything he said is without it.
But I love it. It works so perfectly.
I was so caught off guard by it, and it was like, he was so charming with that lisp.
He was!
And I'm like, oh my god.
I almost forgot it was Samuel L. Because you always see him, you always see Samuel in a movie, and you say, oh, that's motherfucking Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah, he wasn't screaming about bastards and motherfuckers.
Yeah, like, he actually played a pretty eccentric, like, internet billionaire pretty damn well.
Pretty well, yeah. Yeah.
But, Lancelot gets cut.
He has an aversion to blood, which is kind of fun. Which is, you know what was great about that? And is that they didn't overplay that.
Yeah, just when it was...
just when it was necessary.
That was actually a good little bit. But, so Lancelot dies, and the Kingsmen, they're at a loss for what's happening. Like, they're trying to figure out what Lancelot found out that, you know, that he was trying to find and whatever. But they also have to fill Lancelot's position.
So, by tradition, the remaining Kingsmen can nominate a candidate.
Each remaining Kingsman nominates a candidate to go to the training program.
Yeah.
And Colin Firth...
Nominates
the son...
Yeah, of the...
Iggsy.
Eggsy, yeah.
The son of the man who saved his life in Afghanistan, like,
17 years ago. Yeah, because he gets arrested
for stealing
a car.
He gets arrested for some shit.
A great goddamn scene.
That actually was funny as shit. Like, even like it's even the menial scenes like that that, like, they were done just right.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't overdone, they weren't underdone, they hit it right on the knob.
So, he gets arrested and for his one phone call, which you and I both thought was going to be kind of cliche, but it played out well.
Oh, it's fucking great. So he's sitting in the police station. He won't give up the two buddies that were in the car with him. So the guy's like, "Well, you're going away for 18 months. Hopefully, I'll call your mom. Hopefully, your one call is to your mom. Tell her you're not going to be home for a while.
You're going to be late for dinner by 18 months."
That's so he's turned this metal into a chain around his neck that he wears. So he pulls it off. He calls the number, and the number goes to a
just an operator.
And a fucking operator. It's like, oh no, it's a customer service. Like,
yeah, yeah.
And he's like, yeah, I need help. I was told to call this. She's like, I'm sorry, you have the wrong number. And he goes, oh, wait. What was it again?
Oxford,
not Braggs.
Yeah.
She goes, your complaint has been registered. We hope we've saved your business or, whatever. Yeah. And then click, you're nothing. And then the next scene you see is him walking out of the station.
And then Colin Firth is waiting.
And then Colin Firth is waiting for him outside. You know, he's like, hey, follow me. And like, you know, a little bit of, you know, chit chat. All this happens. Goes to the pub. Great fight scene with Colin Firth, where you get to see what Colin Firth's all about, and like the character gets to see.
I've never seen Colin Firth move that way, and part of that had to be CGI. But holy crap, did that look good?
I mean, it's phenomenal. And we said this on the ride home. Shaky cam in this movie is perfection.
Yeah, because. All right. Typically, shaky cam in fight scenes is nauseating.
It's there specifically to make it unable for you to see like details in the choreography, yeah, or to see the details enough to be able to pick it apart. This shaky cam, like I told Steve, it was like the shaky cam was taking place on a GoPro on the shoulder of Colin Firth or one of the bad guys. All the shakiness was due to the movement of the character, and it was still like when the character stopped, there was moments of intense movement,
yeah,
and then there was stillness. You could see what's going on. The movement, stillness, and it worked so.
It was not the Jason Bourne shaky cam.
No, not even close. Yeah. It was freaking perfect. So they have a point of it at the pub.
Yeah.
And then,
which is great because like it sets this tone for members of the Kingsmen are not brash and violent. They are men of honor and
the gentleman.
Yeah, they're gentlemen.
Huh. They're not. He like the people came up and talk shit and they're like, and Colin Firth, get the fuck out of here. And Colin Firth at first starts walking out. He's like,
cool. At first he says, I've had an emotional day,
yeah,
and I would like to have a conversation with my friend
and finish my pint of Guinness.
And finish my pint of delicious Guinness. And
they tell him to fuck off.
If you could just give us some space, and they tell him to fuck off. So he goes and he
gets up and he's like, all right, cool, I'm out.
He goes to walk away, and they make a comment at him, and then he goes and he bolts the door shut while saying what is probably the thesis of this movie, which is manners doth make the man.
Was it man? Okay, I thought manners maketh the man, but
that's it. Manners maketh
the man. As he's bolting the door shut, and then unleashes a fucking hellstorm on everybody.
Yeah, beating a bunch of guys up with an umbrella.
With a goddamn umbrella. It's like,
given it's a sophisticated spy umbrella, wow, but it's
also a gentleman's. It's also a gentleman's bumbleshoot.
Yep.
But so okay, so this kid Eggsy. Because they call him Iggy.
Yeah.
So his name's Eggsy.
Like Eggy in a basket.
So he gets pulled into this, like they said, they like Merlin calls it the world's most dangerous job.
Yeah, Mark Strong's character's name is Merlin. God damn, is that awesome.
Oh, it's perfect. And his position in the Kingsman is actually pretty damn perfect for being Merlin.
He basically trains the newcomers. Yeah.
And he's the computer guy. Yeah, yeah. He's in charge of all that technology. Essentially, that's it. All that technology.
Yeah.
But so they go through this whole like training bit, and they're learning about teamwork and
the flooding scene was really cool.
The flooding scene was really damn cool. No, the scene that was the bomb was the fucking skydive scene.
Skydive
scene was the bomb. Six of them jump out. On the way down, they have to land within this tiny little marker, but avoid radar, so they can only pull their parachutes at a certain point. halfway down in mid free fall, while they're just hanging around, having a good time, laughing, joking, whatever, Merlin comes on all their mics and goes, "Hey, just so you know, one of you doesn't have a parachute."
Yeah, so basically saying, are you going to work as a team, or are you going to save yourself?
They were trying to pair off into twos. The one dude freaks out, pulls his parachute, so they have to get in a circle, and everybody takes turns pulling until there's only two left.
Yep.
And it's Iggy and Roxy. Is the she is the closest thing to like a love interest that you get in the movie,
which was so refreshing.
Yeah.
Holy crap, was it nice to have like a girl with like. Some like the most
she had sex appeal
the minimal amount of sexual
attention.
But
there are those moments like the way that he kind of lingers before she like goes up on the thing later on, like
there is
that like feelings bit to it, but it's not like that overtly uber sexual bullshit.
Yeah, and no one jumps through hoops to get each other or anything like that.
Exactly.
There's no weird jealousy.
Like, she's never in fucking danger, and he has to make the choice.
She's not a damsel in distress.
Right.
She
not at all. And isn't that the girl from Kick-Ass, by the way?
No, that's not
you
Chloe Grace Moretz. I know for a fact that's not Chloe Grace Moretz.
No,
you don't even have to look that up. It's not Chloe Grace Moretz.
I'm going to do it just because I know I believe you, but fuck you.
Okay. that's fair. We're friends forever. That's fair. No, but so the movie is this really great balance between...
Well, hold on. I got to finish the skydiving scene. So everybody takes turns pulling their pins.
Yep.
The only... and so it comes down to Roxy and Iggy.
Yep.
And so... They just grip onto each other. Roxy pulls hers, and the parachute comes out. And they like, you know, it's like crazy.
And Roxy was freaking out about the jump to begin.
Oh yeah, she was losing her mind. So like that was part of like the kind of love interest.
That was the most love tension.
He was like the calming influence, saying it's all right, you're gonna do this, blah blah blah. But they get to the ground, and you know the Merlin comes out. He dismisses three of them for pulling parachutes too early, and then he goes to.
The last thing.
And then he's like, "Do you have any questions?" And Iggy's like, "Hey, why the fuck do I gotta be the 12 without the parachute or some bullshit?" And he's like, Merlin's like, "You're a gentleman now. You have a problem." You whispered in my ear, and so he walks up and he says, and he says the same thing, and Merlin just leans in his ear. You gotta get that chip off his shoulder, mate. And pulls his ripcord, and a fucking parachute comes screaming out of it.
So the whole time, his parachute worked.
Yeah. It's a great fucking scene. Because then you see the kid's face, like, and that's what I like about it. He looks like he should be a prick.
Yeah.
But everything that he does in the movie makes him super likable. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, he gets pulled back and he just kind of looks and he just gets this grin on his face like, motherfucker.
I fell for it. Yeah. It's great. It felt real. Like, that was the thing about it. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know people who learn that way, and you know people who are going to become assholes when you do that kind of shit.
Yep.
And this kid felt like one of those guys that you know who, like, when kind of bested, will learn from it.
Mm-hmm.
It worked. And then what was great about this movie is, in between all these training scenes, Colin Firth is working against Samuel L. Jackson to try and figure out what's going on. And all of these little espionage scenes work really well. Against the training, and the great thing is, like, the training stuff wasn't even applicable to what Colin Firth was doing. Like, it wasn't like, oh, they're gonna train on this, and here's Colin Firth doing this. It was
Sophie Cookson.
Is that her name?
Yeah.
She been in anything else?
Kingsman.
Yeah.
Dude, this is her fourth movie ever.
Okay.
Fourth movie ever.
Good spot. So then basically Samuel Jackson's character comes out with this thing where basically he, to look generous, releases a SIM card that anyone can pick up for free that gives you free calls, free internet, free everything.
Yeah.
It'll work on any cell phone. Yeah. And so everybody goes nuts and they think he's such a genius, and Colin Firth is investigating him. But the two best scenes as far as this goes is A, the dinner scene.
Yeah.
Because Colin Firth plays this guy. He's got a...
this billionaire, and he donates way too much money to...
And he flat out says, make my profile that which would look to be good to be kidnapped.
Right.
And they meet, and, like, dinner is McDonald's. Like, they pull up the silver platter, you pull it up, and it's...
He's like, I'll have the Big Mac, please.
And it's like...
Excellent choice.
Excellent choice. The Thapilio choice is 2 double cheeseburgers with special sauce.
the best is this assassin in the background that's serving it, like French style.
Yeah, filling, like nice
French service, like forking and knifing, like, fries onto the plate and shit. But no, like, the fact that Samuel Jackson's not a dumbass, and Colin Firth isn't a dumbass, and they both know each other, like... Even the banter that they have during the dinner is pretty much obvious that, what was it? He was, like, talking about old school Bond movies, and he's like, God, I always wanted to be a spy. And Colin Firth's like, you know, I actually always wanted to be a villain. And then
he said the strength of the Bond movies always came from
the villain and all that. And Samuel Jackson eventually says, well, unfortunately, we both had to grow up. Basically saying neither of us got what we wanted. Like, instead of being the villain, Colin Firth is the spy, and Samuel Jackson, instead of being the spy, is the villain. Yeah. I fucking love
that
line.
So good,
but. It didn't even come to a head. They part ways and go.
Yeah, there was no crazy trying to kill each other.
And then they meet up at fucking the Kingsman headquarters, which Samuel Jackson tracked Colin Firth to.
Yeah, and convince Michael Caine to join.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, all that. Because
the cool stuff with the scars was really nice.
Yeah, it was a good little touch.
And then you have that going on. Then you have the rest of the training and the shooting the dog scenes, which were great.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, if I was in the training, I would assume that they wouldn't ask me to kill the dog, because the entire thing about the Kingsman
is teamwork.
Is, like, yeah, it's teamwork. It's looking out for the little guy kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I do love when Colin Firth shows the kid his dog, and he's like, you shot your dog and then stuffed him on the walls. No, I cared for my dog for 11 years, and then when he died of pancreatic cancer, I had him stuffed. It's like, you don't shoot the dog that blanks. I fucking love that.
It was so good. And then after that scene, it leads to probably what you and I have discussed as the best scene of the movie, which is the church scene.
Okay, yeah, so Samuel Jackson and Colin Firth are playing this back and forth.
Yeah, so Colin Firth is investigating.
Colin Firth realizes
the only lead he has
is this podunk Baptist church in Kentucky.
God, which, damn it.
Which, damn it, we live here. So I want to call them out for being wrong, but damn it if I haven't seen that actually happen.
God damn it, we live here.
But God damn it, we live here, and we know it's not that far off. But there's this Bible-thumping preacher. He's talking about the gays and the N-words.
It's a hate group and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's
Colin Firth has one great line before.
I could never do it justice, so I won't talk about it. But
look it up.
He's sitting in the church.
He essentially says that he is everything this church hates.
Yeah. He's getting up, and he's leaving. So Samuel Jackson used this church as his, like, testing point.
Yeah.
So when he sees Firth leaving, he turns it on.
He turns on the SIM cards.
He turns on these SIM cards, which, according to him, activate, like, the take away all the inhibitors in your brain and make you want to kill people.
And activate the aggression meters in your brain.
So you get to watch.
The general idea is that the planet is too overpopulated
and needs to be culled.
Yes. So by forcing people to kill each other,
there will be, like, the elite of the world that are invited by Samuel L. Jackson are saved.
Great purge.
The purge.
We'll do those movies later.
But single-handedly made Colin Firth an action hero. This scene.
Jesus, that scene.
Because, like, okay, so he is also affected by this SIM
chip. Even though he doesn't have the SIM card,
he is also affected by it. And you watch him just fucking slaughter people.
He kills at least 20.
But 20 just by gunshot, let alone the people he stabs and shit.
I remember we stopped. I wish we could have paused the theater at the spot where some guy stabs him in the back. He takes that knife, stabs one guy in the head, shoots two people, then pulls the knife out of the dude's eye,
then stabs another guy in the top of the head.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Like, I... jaw dropped.
It was a flat out, like, 3 or 4 minute straight action sequence.
It was an entire song that was playing. Like, they were playing like an English kind of poppy song.
Yeah, and God, he goes. It's this massive. It's super violent, but it's not. Oh, it's It's just under being over the top, if that makes any sense.
Because it's not, like, it is gory enough to make you realize that it's actually happening. Mm-hmm. But it's not, like, there's not focusing on, like, all the people bleeding and shit. Dude dies, nobody focuses on him anymore.
Yeah.
So, okay, this is the last time I can say, spoiler, turn it off now if you don't want to completely ruin the movie completely.
Yeah, you might want to stop now. If you've been listening to this out of good fun...
Just get me back up to your level.
Oh, okay.
No, trust me. If you have any interest in this movie, which you should, because this movie is phenomenal.
And nothing ruined. Like, you should be seeing this movie. You should have already seen this movie. I'm going to text.
This is pretty much like 6 weeks. Well, we saw the movie probably 6 weeks before this is actually going to come out on a podcast. So
yeah, we saw this movie. It'd been out for a week already.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It came out when 50 Shades of Grey did, because they were at the box office together.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we're not even going to dignify that movie.
Yeah.
But no, okay, so one of the biggest points in the movie, Colin Firth comes out of the church afterwards, the SIM cards are turned off. Spoiler alert,
turn it off now if you want to
spoil. Turn it off now if you don't want a spoiler.
Okay.
He comes out, he's back to normal because the SIM cards are turned off. Outside are two armed guards, the femme fatale assassin, and Samuel Jackson. Mm-hmm. Samuel L. explains, you know, gives him the whole monologuing plot.
And he makes a comment about that.
He makes a comment about
Bond,
like,
villains and their monologuing.
And they're monologuing. He's like,
he's got me monologuing.
The Incredibles satire is one of my favorites ever, and the fact that they're finally going to make a sequel to it is long
overdue. Are they going to do that?
Yes, it has been greenlighted. It's
good,
happening.
Good. Long overdue.
But he finally says, this isn't that movie, and Colin Firth, who's... I mean, they actually probably have a great deal of respect for each other because of the cat and mouse game that they play.
Yeah.
But Colin Firth says, well, thank God this isn't that movie. And Samuel Jackson just hauls off and puts one through the dude's fucking face.
Yeah.
Shoots him right through the fucking eyes. And the best part of that scene is that Samuel immediately turns around and has to hold back his gag reflex.
Because he has a
affliction for blood. Because if he sees blood, he will yak.
Yeah.
He looks over at his assassin lady and he's like, "Is he dead?"
And she
goes, "Yeah, that tends to happen when you shoot him in the face."
And then she has this weird sociopathical response of, "How good did that feel?" And he goes, "That was terrible."
Yeah,
how odd is that for a villain?
For a villain who's about to murder like two-thirds of the population at least. Yeah. but Colin Firth just gets fucking murdered.
And so then Samuel Jackson has this plan in place where he's trying to get celebrities and political figures.
Celebrities, political figures, anybody who's a big wig.
Yeah, so anyone who will go with him gets a chip implanted in their head.
That will immunize them
to
the SIM card.
But anyone who doesn't, anyone that he wants under his regime is locked away in a cell.
They're locked away in a cell because they're still important enough to not kill, but he doesn't want them to. But he doesn't want them to be able to, you know, escape.
Yeah. So they haven't been SIM carded yet, or they haven't been implanted yet because they haven't agreed with him.
Right.
But they're still being captive, and one of those is a Swedish princess. A
Swedish princess. Yeah.
Yeah.
But to bring back a little bit, the chips have they're two-faced. Number one, it prevents them, it immunizes them. But number two, there's a trigger in them.
Yeah.
That if it gets flipped, for instance, Mark Hamill got one implanted in him, and if something happens, like Colin Firth tried to interrogate Mark Hamill, mm-hmm. the chip goes off, melts the dude's face, and you die.
Yeah.
So.
Well, his head exploded and then put Colin Firth in a coma.
Yeah. His head exploded. Colin Firth was exposed to, like, besides concussion damage, just, like, the shock of everything happening, blows up the fucking room and, like, flies out the window and is put in a coma.
yeah, basically. So this was way before the church scene. So Colin Firth is dead, and Eggsy sees all this, and Eggsy has been kicked out.
Eggsy has since failed his last test because they were both everybody was given a puppy that they had to raise and train.
And when it came to graduate,
he was handed a gun, and he had to shoot the dog.
And he wouldn't do it.
But Roxy did.
Hey, likable Eggsy.
So Roxy becomes Lancelot. Eggsy kicked out. So Iggsy goes to talk to Galahad, who is Colin Firth.
Yep.
Galahad then goes to the church, and Iggsy gets to watch as his mentor slash closest thing he's had to a father gets executed. And so he runs back to the he runs back to the Kingsman and starts talking to Michael Caine, who is Arthur.
Yeah, Arthur.
Fresh off his recent trip to Burma.
Yep.
Working with the local governments.
Yep.
God, I gotta make that
Handing
joke.
Handing out rubies.
I gotta make that joke every time. I'm sorry. It's
the best Michael Caine joke.
It's Michael Caine.
It's never gonna get old.
But Michael Caine is sitting in his spot that they all sit in for the
Anytime a Kingsman dies, they have a Napoleonic
like
brandy.
18 something like yeah. era scotch.
That they it's a brandy.
Oh, brandy, sorry.
Yeah, that they do a shot of basically in yeah. remembrance. And so he offers
So he's sitting there and he offers one to Eggsy.
And before they take the drink, Eggsy notices a scar on the back of his ears.
So he knows that Offa
has been turned by
Valentine Samuel. So does a little backstreet sleight of hand, switches the glasses, takes the shot with him, and it turned out Michael Caine tried to poison him, poisons mm-hmm. himself by accident.
Yep.
So Michael Caine's dead. So now all that's left is
he runs to Merlin.
Merlin. So it's Merlin.
Which also in a great string of just good storyline writing, Merlin believes everything he says.
Well, he also had proof too. He had Arthur's phone.
Yeah.
Who was getting shit from Valentine.
It was so well, like they left no room for like, okay, no. Yeah, that all makes sense.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But you know, so like Roxy is there, the now Lancelot Roxy is there with Merlin, yeah. And they take Iggsian.
Who unofficially basically becomes Galahad.
He's just Iggsy.
Yeah, he's just
but he is Galahad. So they go off on this, like, they can't trust any of the other Kingsmen because they don't know who else has been turned. So it's them three against the world. So they go off on this big convoluted plan. They jump on the Learjet. They take off. Roxy's tasked with shooting down a satellite to prevent the spread of the chip when it goes out. And then Iggsy and Merlin go flying and pretend to be... Michael Caine?
They pretend to be Colin Firth's character. Because Colin Firth's character, who donated the billions, is still technically invited to...
No, it was Arthur, because they use Arthur's real name.
You're right, it's Arthur's real name.
Yes, okay, it was not Colin Firth. Yeah. They go, I mean, there's no name, there's no like pictures or anything, it's just fucking Chris something head.
And
something.
He's got the things on his phone and all the other
stuff.
Correct.
He needs. Yeah, correct. So, Iggsy shows up. Gets invited to the party, blah, blah, blah. Has to get to a computer so that Merlin can do his magic from the plane, try to stop the virus.
That great spot with, hey, you just changed from my pilot to my valet. And Merlin goes, you cheeky fucker.
You just hear under his breath, cheeky. I love it. The great little bit of banter. It's great. But so, okay, all this.
And to be fair, and like, I know as much as we've said this before, how much as, like, Guardians of the Galaxy was the Star Wars of our generation. The one thing that was... What?
What was this of our generation?
No. I was saying, like, the one scene that movie was missing, this movie capitalized on,
mm-hmm.
and that's the Falcon in the Death Star scene. And the whole plane being in that hangar...
Oh, yeah.
...was very much the Falcon in the Death Star.
Yeah, well...
And it worked really well.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, Iggsy goes in, he's got to find a computer, gets a computer, and, you know, all those little details are, you know, they don't matter.
They happen, but it's...
They happen, and it's cool, now, but you don't need to.
One of the great scenes in this, though, is Iggsy in a full suit, Alright, I'm not going to ruin that part of it, but so Eggsy's in a full suit, and he's running through this place.
He's in a Kingsman suit.
Yeah, and he looks badass.
Yeah, and for being in a well tailored suit hangs so much better.
He gets cornered in this spot, and he has this brilliant idea to activate the.
We're talking 60 like armed men are like have cornered him into the hollows of
the
cell.
No way in or out.
Yeah, and Merlin is about to get a fucking surface to air missile launched at his plane. So they're like, oh shit, we're boned. And then Iggsy goes, hey. Can you, if you're still hacked in, can you activate all the chips? And Merlin's like, bloody brilliant idea.
Yeah. And then you had this great 1 minute montage of everybody's head exploding.
And even for the Republicans, you get to watch the back of the head of what would be Obama explode.
Yeah, probably Obama.
It's fucking great. But you just see, like,
and one of the greatest twists I've ever seen in a movie. Something I never saw coming. The door he's hiding at happens to be the Swedish princess's door.
Who refused to go along with the plan, so they held her captive. And she's been there since pretty much the beginning of the movie.
Yeah. And they basically, like, the kid makes this offhand comment about basically saying, like, if I save you, I'm gonna fuck you.
Yeah.
But, like, but jokingly.
If I save you, can I get a kiss?
And she says, you'll get more than a kiss. And so then, like, that would have been great.
So he comes back.
If you would have left it at that, it would have been great.
Yeah.
But then before he leaves, she says, if you save the world, you can put it in my asshole. Which is just like, holy
and
shit.
The look on his face is like, oh, I'll be right back.
And then, like, they go through this whole series of events where, like, he fights the minion, and he kills Samuel L. Jackson, and he stops the whole process from happening. And then
as he's walking out amongst all these headless people, he takes a bottle of champagne and two glasses and takes off running.
And he gets to her quarters, and he has Mark Strong.
He has to call Merlin. He's like, hey, what's the number for the door? He's like, 6325.
It's 2526.
Yeah, whatever. But he types it in and opens it up.
And then, just waiting on a couch for him.
And then you see Merlin's, like, got the view from the glass cam, and, like, see, it, like, pans down of her, like, half-naked body. He's like, oh. Yeah. And you just see him slowly close the monitors, like, ew. Yep.
He doesn't say, like... Like, it was perfect. It was goddamn perfect.
I love it. You know, it ends perfect. Like, it goes to credit, and then they had the little bit at the end where he beats the shit out of the abusive stepfather.
Yep.
And
it's alluded to that.
Well, he
does hit him. Yeah. He domed him with a
friggin' pint glass.
Yeah.
But then the movie ends. And it's set up perfect for a sequel, but it doesn't need one.
It doesn't need one, yeah. It's the Star Wars A New Hope ending.
It's the A New Hope ending. It doesn't need anything. But there's plenty of places to go from there.
Yep, you could. If you did it right.
But yeah, like the female most lead, Roxy, really great.
Yep.
Really great role. Colin Firth.
Fucking amazing.
Ridiculous.
I was always an okay Colin Firth fan. Like, if I saw him with something...
Well, there's always dramas. You know, there's always dramas, love movies, shit like that.
And then he did this goddamn action movie.
Just that three minute plus scene where he just goes batshit crazy and fucks up everybody.
Yeah, it was great.
Actually, no, honestly, the pub scene where he beats the shit out of, like, the thugs is better because he's in control the whole time. It's not just, like, his rage that's controlling him. He fucks these kids up, and then he sits back down and finishes his Guinness.
That was great. Goddamn, this is a great movie. And so the comic book this is based on is made by the same guy who did Kick-Ass. And... I don't know if any other movies of his have been done yet, but Mark Millar is the creator.
But who is the director the same guy from Kick-Ass?
Well, no, the director is the guy who did X-Men First Class.
Give that guy, like, all the money. All the money.
No, if Fox has that guy in retainer, they're in good space.
Yeah, oh my god, yes.
And this was a 20th Century Fox movie, and there was another spot where, like, a movie star was abducted, and there was a spot in the corner where it was, like, 20th Century Fox was, like, the movie...
Yeah.
Company that was doing the movie of the person who was abducted.
Yeah, Valentine.
Which was like, I'm like, okay, I'm all right with that.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Like, I think Fox is... Because we talked briefly on our comic book movie episode about how...
How about Marvel's hitting the nail on the head with everything, and everybody else is looking at that model and trying to figure out how to emulate it, mm-hmm. but not entirely, like, copy it.
And I think Fox, out of everybody, has the right idea.
They're on the damn right track.
Because, well, they've got, as far as I'm concerned, they have three really good X-Men movies as of recent. So you've got First Class.
Are you counting Apocalypse as?
No, I'm counting First Class.
Wolverine 2.
The Wolverine.
Yeah, Wolverine 2.
And Days of Future Past. And then To be fair, that new Fantastic Four trailer doesn't look awful.
I'm gonna ask you what is your huge malfunction with the new movie? Why are you so?
Well, no. To be
why
fair,
why are you so pessimistic on it?
When I first heard what was going on, the general consensus was that the director, who was the same guy who did the movie, oh god, what was that movie? I never saw it, but it was that found footage movie where like the kids have superpowers.
Super 8?
Not Super 8. It was Continuum or
probably. I don't know. I know what you're talking about. Yeah,
but it's like three kids who find a meteor.
Like the friends get superpowers.
Yeah, yeah.
That's Super 8, isn't it?
No, Super 8's the Spielberg one.
Oh, that is Spielberg. Yeah, never mind. You're right.
They find the alien.
You're
right. Yeah. But anyway, so everyone was under the assumption, basically, I had bad intel.
Nah.
I was under the impression that this movie was going to be a found footage.
Ugh, gross.
Right?
That would have been a terrible fucking movie. No, but the trailer's nothing like that.
The trailer looks good, and all of the people that are in it are actors that I really like.
I would have liked Brittany Snow to be...
But that's a good...
It was a good switch.
Yeah.
It was a good switch, but Brittany Snow's top five.
The kid who's Reed... Alright, so the kid who's Reed Richards is in my, like, snobby top movie list, because... I really like The Way, Way Back, and...
Oh, you mean that Muffet Lady?
Yeah. oh my god, alright, so... Yeah.
that bit was fucking... That bit was great.
We're gonna leave that be, because our friends who will get that joke will love that.
Yeah.
We're not gonna ruin that. So the kid who plays Reed Richards in Fantastic Four is... He's in The Way, Way Back, and he's in Whiplash.
Uh-huh.
And it's just... He's a great fucking actor.
Mm-hmm.
But he's only been in, like, these weird dramas.
Couple of movies.
Well, they're dramas that are, like, Oscar movie bait.
And bullshit.
Essentially.
Well, I mean, honestly, like, there are several Oscars that I could nominate this one for.
Yeah.
Like, and it's so weird of me to say, because I don't want to be that guy that's like, this movie should win awards, because it's good in its own right. It doesn't need a fucking award. The Oscars need
to change, because...
They need to recognize good movie making and not emotional movie making.
Yes.
Like, they need to not be, like, we're going to make a movie that says a statement that's more profound than the movie to get an Oscar.
Whereas, like, why don't you just find a really well-made movie?
Why don't you just fucking make a great goddamn movie that's enjoyable, it's fun, has a great plot, and give that a fucking Oscar?
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing about this movie.
I'm not saying that The Kingsman needs an Oscar, but at the same time, like, if we were going to change things out, this is on the front run.
But you're talking about, like, this is... I'll have to think about this a little bit, but it's definitely the best movie I've seen in theaters... I think it's better than Guardians of the Galaxy.
I would too. That's
so weird for me to say, because Guardians of the Galaxy,
saying how good Guardians is.
Guardians of the Galaxy was like my new Star Wars, and I'm so on board with Kingsman that I would say if there was a Guardians 2 and a Kingsman 2, I'd rather see Kingsman 2 first.
Yeah. No,
I don't know because
depends on the trailer.
Oh, no. See that. I will give the nod to Kingsman for the first one, but I know that Guardians 2 will be phenomenal.
Okay.
I'm not sure if Kingsman 2 will be phenomenal.
Yeah, because one of the
Because you don't know, because, like, this is... I want to read the comics, because I want to know how far they went into the comics with this story.
I knew what they changed about Kick-Ass, and after finding out what they changed about Kick-Ass, I want to read the Kick-Ass comics.
Really?
So, all right. So, remember in Kick-Ass how Nick Cage was a cop who was... So the original storyline...
I think you told me this, yeah.
The original storyline in the Kick-Ass comic books is that Nick Cage was actually... He originally was a cartoon artist, but he rewrote his backstory for his daughter as being a cop. Like, he was never a cop.
Oh, okay.
He rewrote that backstory so that when she read those little comic books, her dad was a hero.
Huh.
So that makes him crazier to be Big Daddy.
In the comic books, yeah.
Yeah. Than in the movies.
Huh.
Which, I mean, would have added just a little more to the movie, but it didn't need it. It was just one of those things, you know.
Didn't need it. Yeah, Kick-Ass is a great movie.
From what I've heard, the movie version of Kingsman is better than the comic book version of Kingsman.
Honestly, I couldn't see how that's wrong. Like, oh, man.
This was, like, such, this was such a well-balanced
It's
movie.
Still taken me a minute to really let it sink in, because, like I said, I came into it with surprisingly high hopes, and I'm still trying to find a reason to, like, to bring it down to at least where my hopes were.
I've got nothing.
I really don't. The plot was pretty much seamless.
The worst thing is sometimes the accents are so thick, it's hard to understand what they're saying.
There was a bit where it was a little bit Cockney.
A little bit Cockney.
Ugh.
Yeah.
But, yes.
But even then, upon second viewing, you'll know what they're saying.
But it doesn't matter. This is a movie that I would instantly watch again.
This is going to be one of those, like, the second it comes out on Blu-ray, I'm buying it.
You know how rare it is for us to say that?
Rare nowadays, yeah.
Like, for me to go out and spend, like, $18 to buy a Blu-ray, like, I own, like, 8.
Yeah.
And the majority of them are shit like Avatar, the Jurassic Park series, which, honestly, if I could have bought
If I
could have bought the first one solo, I would have bought the first one solo, yeah. But it came as a package. It's like 3 copies of Time Cop. It's like, why, I don't even want 1 copy of Time Cop, but I guess I gotta have 3. But it's like Fanboys.
Fanboys are great Blu-ray to have.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
I need Fanboys on Blu-ray.
The only Blu-rays I have are like those like milestone movies for me.
Yeah.
And the fact that I walk out of this theater, and like, I didn't even think that way with Guardians of the Galaxy. I don't currently own Guardians of the Galaxy.
I do, but
not on Blu-ray.
Because I'm on the Disney Movie Club.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah, yeah.
Does that make Star-Lord a Disney prince?
Yeah. It also makes Princess Leia a Disney princess.
A Disney princess, yeah. She's the newest category. Yeah. She's the newest in the category.
She beat Jasmine.
That's a push for me.
It's an easy win on my book.
Yeah. And them donuts, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, fucking cop. Yeah. But no, I will probably buy this when it comes out, because I am that intrigued to watch it again.
And I was going to even tell you this earlier. So we talked briefly about John Wick.
Yeah.
And you haven't seen it yet.
Nope.
I have. And John Wick is one of the most enjoyable action movies I've ever watched. This far better. Far better.
Good.
And
I've watched way too many movies in my life. Way too many. TV yeah. shows, movies, everything. And I have nothing bad to say. It wasn't even that long either.
Perfect timing.
Like, at no point was I like, holy shit. It's not like Interstellar where you look at your watch every like hour and you're like, holy shit.
At one point I'd take a piss and I had to like choose my timing wisely.
Yeah, because the film wasn't like fucking around when it came to timing. It's not like you had a 30-minute monologue that you could disappear in.
Because, yeah, that was my problem with Interstellar, is there was a lot of downtime in Interstellar that...
Holy... Dude, downtime was, like, the second casted character.
Like, Dilbert...
It's like Matthew McConaughey and then downtime.
Like, friend of the show, Steve Dilbert. Like, we love you to death, but goddamn, that was not the perfect movie you promised us.
Because this was 2 hours and 9 minutes. So,
really, it was,
did not feel like 2 hours and 9 minutes.
It felt like
a 90-minute movie.
It felt like a 90-minute movie in the best way possible.
Yeah. Because, like, at no point did you feel the plot was dragging, but it never felt rushed either.
Yeah. That was...
God damn, it was a good movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
I give it 5 Whiffles out of 5. 5 Samuel L. Jackson Whiffles.
That's fair. That's... God damn, that's fair.
Solid-ass movie. We're gonna have to have another... we need to start bringing back the all-time movie list.
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
We're going to have to let this sit, though. This isn't... We can't... I'm not going to make an emotional choice about this.
We'll come back to this in a couple months.
Yeah, we'll see how it sticks.
Right about this. It feels good, though, because we got on the movie, we've been talking about it for a while, and then we haven't, like, even had, like, a stumble back on something that was messed up.
Okay. Oh, yeah, and a little bit of house cleaning. The all-time greatest martial arts movies.
Uh-huh.
Totally forgot Ninja Assassin.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Love fucking Ninja Assassin. With the pop star, the Japanese pop star Rain as the main character,
mm-hmm.
and nondescript black female as the Interpol agent is the female lead.
Yep.
I don't think she's been in anything else. I couldn't imagine she's been anything that big, but great damn movie.
Yep.
Amazing, like incredibly gory, which is why it wasn't bigger than it was here in the US. But great movie, great sequences, great plot, loved it. Cult classic for me. Yeah. Had to throw that out there.
And then also on corrections list that I forgot to bring up the last time is when we filmed our comic book episode, I cannot believe I did not make the jump to accuse DC of copying Marvel, where the start of the Marvel Cinematic Universe is with Iron Man, and the start of DC Cinematic Universe is with a movie called Man of Steel.
Oh, dang!
Right? Why did we jump on that?
Why did I never get that?
Yeah. All right, so from Three Drink Minimum Podcast, I'm Steve Krieger.
And I'm, as always, Tony Iverson.
And keep drinking, folks.
Please.
And go see goddamn Kingsman. Give this movie all your money.
Just give them the money.
at this point, being the $2 theaters, but give them all four of your dollars to see it twice.
Yeah, but no, or bring someone else.
All right. Take it easy, guys.